This is the Austin Road Show podcast. The Roads Rewind.
All right, then. Back in the saddle on another wonderful Friday afternoon. Got a special guest in with us this afternoon talking about an upcoming appearance, but more than that, just talking about life in general. Chad Prather is an Augusta, Georgia. I don't want to say native because he was actually born up in New Jersey, I think, but he spent most of his young life here in Augusta. Went to Tutt Junior High School and Westside High School with, of all people, my little brother. He is now seen regularly on Blaze TV. Our old buddy Glenn Beck, boss over there, and he has been described as a YouTube phenomenon. Not too many conservative phenomenons on YouTube, but he's one of them. And here he is in studio preparing for his appearance at the Miller Theater. Chad Prather. Chad, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on.
It's an old pro here in the studio with me. I normally have to coach people.
How long have y'all been in this building, in this studio?
Oh, in this studio.
Has this thing been here for a while?
No. Well, relatively speaking. 15 years in this studio.
Yeah.
But we were down the street. Actually, this is like our third studio on Bel Air Road.
See, I don't get to...
The original GAC, though, was on Washington Road.
That's what I thought. It's always interesting to me when I come back to town and I see the things that have changed and I see the things that haven't changed. And it's always interesting. And then I'm like, did I miss that growing up? I don't know.
Well, Kix 99, back when you were here, was on the top of the hill, Observatory Hill over in North Augusta. Mm-hmm. Or not Observatory Hill. Just top of the hill in North Augusta. I'm trying to remember the name of that hill. Was it Schultz Hill? But anyway, we've got 8 radio stations. Now 7 radio stations in this building. So the times have changed.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, when you were a kid, we had 3 TV stations, network affiliates. There was no such thing as Fox. And slowly but surely, all that has changed now. And now you've got 2 buildings with, I think, 8 TV stations in them. And
yeah, we just bootlegged HBO and all the other stuff. But you remember the cable box that sit on top of your TV? You had to switch that thing over?
Well, that was even after my time. My time was the cable that, if you were smart enough,
you could put the channels right between the two.
You could watch through the squiggly lines.
Yeah.
I most of my sex education was through the squiggly
lines. I never did that, Mom.
Oh, Mom's listening today. That's right. Hella, is it Mrs.? It's not Mrs. Prather.
It's Mrs. Prather.
Mrs. Prather?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Mrs. Prather, good to have you along. By the way, I want to fuss at your family a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had known that you were from Augusta. I knew your name. I knew your work. Had no idea that you were the Chad Prather that my brother grew up with.
Well, it's funny
because... Shame on your family for not...
I know. They need to be more
name dropping. That's what I'm saying.
See, now my mother's been telling me, when I come home, you know, Jesus said a prophet has no honor in his hometown, and that's a fact. You know, when I come home, my mom's like, I wish you'd get famous so you could introduce me to so-and-so and so-and-so. And I'm like, Mom, I am famous. Of course I am. No. So you mentioned I was born in New Jersey, and whoever did that Wikipedia page, I hate their guts. I was born there because I just happened to be where my mother was when she had me. And I asked her today, I said, why?
Was she like on a fishing trip? What was she doing?
No, my dad was an engineer, and so I was conceived in Dallas. So being from Fort Worth, now we say that my parents did a dirty thing in a horrible place, being Dallas. So I claim to be a Texan because conception, you know, birth, your human life begins at conception. Of course it does. So anyway, they moved him up to New Jersey, and my mother said, no, we're not staying here. So I spent the first 4 months of my life there, and we came back to her hometown, of course, of Augusta, Georgia. Grew up here.
And your mother was growing up, her maiden name?
Houchins.
Houchins, okay. We just made another connection here. Was it your uncle that was Charlie?
Charles Brum, yeah.
Charlie Brum. I'm laughing out loud. I'm wondering if our general manager, Kent Dunn, is listening, because Charlie Brum, again, is well known to all of us.
Yeah.
God rest his soul. And I actually worked for Charlie for a while.
Did you really?
Yeah. Sure did.
He was a good man.
He was. Mm-hmm. I was one of the first disc jockeys over at Chevy's, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And they found out pretty quickly that I had no clue in hell what I was doing. And so they said, do you know how to mix drinks?
Yeah.
I went back into the broadcasting end of things. I've kind of figured out that simply because you know how to play a record on the radio doesn't mean that you should be playing them in a club.
Right. Yeah, Charlie was a good man.
Yeah. How did you get started with your being conservative, something you're born with?
Yeah.
How'd you get started in the broadcast business?
So for me, we were talking about before we went on air, I used to look at things like social media and Facebook, and I always had my face planted in my phone. My wife used to always say, you always have your face in that darn phone. These days, she's saying, you want me to go get a charger for your phone? You need to, you know, because we built a business out of this thing. But I used to tell her, I said, there's a way to make a living using social media. So I was in the corporate world at the time, and I was I was at the gym one day. I was not in the gym. I was at the gym. There was a huge difference. I was sitting in the parking lot.
I know a guy named Jim.
Yeah. And I called her on the phone, and I said, I'm going to go make a living just being myself. And she said, I don't even know what that means. And I said, well, I think there's a way to build a platform using social media. And what was going to come out of it, I had no idea. So at the time, I started posting observational humor videos, and they went viral. I mean, it just went crazy.
Your truck.
Yeah.
Occasionally with your dog.
And it started with just me sitting in traffic. And so I would put little snippets out in people there in Fort Worth. I kind of got Fort Worth famous, so to speak. People were looking forward to them every day. And I thought it was impressive if 5,000 views on a video or something. Then I did one day comparing Target to Walmart, which was just my observation of the PTSD you get after coming out of a Walmart experience. And a million people watched it in a day.
That's crazy. And I've had a sliver, a very small sliver of that type of success when I have posted a video that's been sent to me. For instance, there was a beatdown in prison.
Yeah.
And I said, somebody sent it to me because they didn't want it connected back to them. And he said, can you please distribute this? I don't want it connected to me in any way. I'll be killed. Sure, I'll take the risk. And I put it on my Facebook page. And I think in the first day, there were like 50,000 hits.
Yeah.
And, you know, when normally 2 or 3,000 is about all I'd get. 50,000 one day. And then the next day, 300,000. And then within about 4 or 5 days, it had been viewed over.
It really is wild.
By the way, that was Facebook. I wasn't smart enough to go to YouTube and try and monetize it.
Well, and honestly, Facebook, I've had way more success on Facebook than YouTube.
Let me ask you about this, because back in the day, Facebook back in the day, 5 years ago, they were doing things much differently.
Very different.
As they have throttled everyone down.
Especially if you have a conservative voice.
Big time. Has that affected you?
Oh, of course. I mean, I've got the graphs and the analytics to prove it. People want to say it's just a urban legend that's going around and we're making this stuff up. But no, I've got the numbers to prove it. So my politicalcowboy.com, my blog page, was experiencing about 750,000 visitors a day in its heyday. On January 27th of 2018, when they really throttled back, because we were driving traffic through Facebook, when they throttled back on us, we went down. We were lucky if we had 3,000 visitors a day.
That's crazy.
Three quarters of a million visitors a day.
I saw it happen with me, and I've got 37,000 followers on Facebook, and which is unheard of for one guy in a town this size.
Yeah.
So, and again, I was incredibly impressed at the number of hits we would get and comments and all this kind of stuff. And then about that time that you mentioned, I noticed a severe drop-off, and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm actually gaining followers every day. How is this happening? Yeah. What have they done? And that's when I started picking up on the fact that it was a concerted effort that was being made by Facebook. And I'm very proud to say that I've never one time invested a dime in the advertising plans that Facebook throws at you, you know, promote.
I used to be able to brag about that. Doing the live shows now, we do, because it's the only way to play the game.
That's how you do it.
It's the only way to play the game.
And they forced that, and I feel like they kind of got everybody hooked like a drug dealer does.
Yeah.
And then says, okay, now you want all these hits, now you got to pay the piper.
I can honestly say I've never boosted a post. You know, for instance, I've never boosted a video to try to get more. It's all been organic and natural. But it's been an interesting thing. So, for instance, my Political Cowboy Facebook page, I have four pages that I manage. There's my personal page. It's got 1.5 million followers. Then I've got the Chad Prather business page, which is actually a smaller page. Political Cowboy grew to 1 million followers in the space of 5 months. And I'm telling you, it got to about 1.2. It has not grown in a year and a half. I mean, I can look at the numbers.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that something that grew that big, that fast.
In the meantime, you are getting more professional promotion, and you've got a higher professional presence than you've ever had.
Yeah.
You know, being affiliated with Blaze TV and Glenn Beck is huge.
Yeah.
And you would think that alone would drive you into the stratosphere.
Yeah, because, you know, again, it's been an organic growth, and it's sort of a catch-22 because I have a lot of people who say, well, we kind of miss the old raw videos in the truck. We just want to see that. Now we're doing, you know, the Chad Prather Show podcast. We're doing 4 episodes a week, Monday through Thursday.
You look like you're standing in Seth Meyers' studio in New York.
Yeah, exactly. It's nice. And we're building.
It's very slick.
The studio we're building now is, that's our temp studio. And we kind of created it to look like we're in the man cave, you know. And the one they're building now is going to be talk show worthy. It's going to be.
Well, the one you're in now is
really, it really is nice. And we work, you know, I've got guys.
I must tell you, just as a little friendly advice here, that not that you need it. Toss in a pickup truck visit every now and then.
And so here's the problem. So we do that. But the thing is, again, back to the Facebook censorship, people don't always see them. So I try to put at least one out a week where I'm doing that. It's been problematic because I haven't had my truck in the last couple of months, having some work done on it. And then it's kind of hard to sit in the car and wear a cowboy hat because people say, what is this guy? You know, but and I don't want the dog in the Mercedes. So, but you know, we try to do that because it's kind of the bread and butter. I've always said you got to dance with the one that brought you,
sure.
You know, and that's the one who brought us where we are. And the last 3 months have just been chaotic for us. But again, I'm putting them out there. You just don't have the same level of virality that you once had on these videos because they get throttled back. So I did one in the truck the other day about socialism, one of my favorite topics, and it's at about 700,000. Now, the last video I did about socialism did 7 or 8 million. On the thing. And so you can see where it's kind of anything related to politics right now. I mean, thank you, Cambridge Analytica.
Yeah, unbelievable the effect that a couple of pointy heads have had on what was an incredibly natural surge of popularity with a lot of folks. All right, got to take a quick break. We'll be back, unfortunately, in regular talk radio. We have these commercial breaks. One of these days we'll have a per fee, per view, whatever. It'll be Mike's mom and my mom, and both of our moms are dead, by the way. So shows you how successful we'll be. The Austin Rhodes Show on a busy Friday afternoon. Chad Prather is in town. He is back in town, I guess is the better way to put it. When was the last time you got to hang out in Augusta for longer than a day or two?
Well, let's see. My wife and I were here a few months back. The last time we came through for a visit was actually last Mother's Day. I had just done a show at the Georgia Theater in Athens, and we were on our way to do show in Charleston, and we surprised my mother. We popped in, party foul Steve here. We popped in and surprised her and you know, had our tears.
You did a show at the Georgia Theater in Athens?
That was surreal. So
I was going to say, I didn't know that they did conservative political.
Well, you know what? I have a great agent who is out in L.A. It was great. It was
really
great. And it was the weird thing was it was
by the
week.
Way, I hope my brother is listening because my brother's played Georgia Theater numerous times.
So it's surreal. Really? Being somebody that went to the University of Georgia to see your name all the way across that marquee was wild. And of course, you know, obviously that's the new one that they rebuilt, but it's the Georgia Theater.
It's the Georgia Theater.
And you know, it's kind of sacred ground right there. But we did well. And oddly enough, it was the week after school was out for the summer. And we still drew a great crowd.
I was going to say, who came?
we filled it up.
That's awesome.
But, you know, I have, oddly enough, Austin, so I've sold out in Portland, Oregon. I've sold out twice in Seattle. We've sold out all over New York.
Now, is that like, you know, folks wanting to show up and look at the panda?
Well, it's funny because
zoo animal that doesn't exist in its natural
surroundings. Exactly. Like, you know, we want to look at this oddity.
Portland, Oregon.
It's like going to the zoo. But we'll go out there and we'll do these shows. And I thought, well, there's no way we'll ever sell a ticket. People will drive from the middle of nowhere to get there. They are so happy that somebody
someone
with some common sense that's going to come out there and speak their language will come out and do a show. And we'll continually go back to those cities.
You guys are going to be, I say you guys, I'm sitting in here with several members of his traveling group here. You'll be at Miller Theater tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I just had an email from one of your fans. Ask Chad if he has any backstage access. I've already got my ticket. So do you sell a VIP package?
We didn't do a meet and greet on this, but what we're going to do tomorrow night is we're going to have some family and friends back right after the show, but I'm going to announce an after party somewhere.
Oh, wonderful.
So we'll do it from the stage.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
We'll announce an after party. So some bar downtown is going to get good business.
Isn't it amazing that when you grew up here, downtown was a forgotten wasteland?
Isn't it crazy? And, I mean, now they've got all these nice places, bars down there. And, I mean, it's a arts district. And you know, I still love Sunshine Bakery. And you know, I'll have to take my wife there. She's coming in tomorrow, so I'll have to take her.
Did you ever visit the Miller Theater when it was shut?
Never did. Never did. I mean, I went to the Marine Room, but whatever.
Well, no, the Miller Theater, when it was shuttered, I mean, it was closed down. There were several of us that had a special access point through the roof.
You knew how to get in there.
And we knew how to get in there. And we would go in there and sit around and enjoy each other's company in the middle of that big, empty, you know, cavernous theater that, again, was sitting in ruins for 30 years.
Yeah.
And it was just recently restored, as you well know. So
it took us forever to finally get a show in Augusta because, okay, so you brought up a good point. First of all, and folks ask me all the time, why won't you come to this city? Why won't you come here? And so we have promoters. And they work hard to get us in all these places, but a lot of the venue owners, let's just face it, people in the art world, in the theater world, tend to be liberal.
Oh, big time.
And
huge.
So they're like, we don't want to have
no doubt
him in here. And so I'm not saying that about Augusta, but we do encounter that all over the country.
Oh, I'll say it about Augusta.
Yeah, and so, you know. And
by the way, I have two very dear friends of mine that are liberal as hell.
Yeah.
They're on the payroll at the Miller that are loving you being here.
So. They're going to have fun tomorrow night.
Because they don't see liberal conservative, what they see.
Yeah.
See, green.
About red and blue, it's about green. That's what we've always said. Yeah. So it's going to be fun.
We'll continue with Chad Prather back home where he belongs. At least that's what his mama says. Chad Prather is a well-known conservative commentator and humorist. He's based out of Fort Worth, Texas right now, but he's seen on Blaze TV and all over YouTube and all over the internet, period. He's been making personal appearances, and what is it? You call them, they're not concerts because you don't play any music, but and they're not.
Oh, but we do.
You do?
Oh, we do.
Are you a musician?
Yeah, we bring
out
the we use the guitar in every show. I'm good enough to entertain with. I'll put it that way. So we do comedy and parody music as well. So we pretty much end every show with a solid 30-minute set of music.
So did you see this Trump thing coming?
Back in 2016, I did a video where I said trying to figure out which candidate is you want in office is like trying to figure out which venereal disease you're most okay living with for the next 4 to 8 years. I didn't know what in the world to think about that whole deal. And so when I entered into the voting booth, there was a box that said Hillary Clinton, and then there was a box that said not Hillary Clinton. And so I went with that one.
That's exactly what I did. Yeah. So, you know, actually during the early stages of the political primary season,
mm-hmm.
Marco Rubio was my guy. Mm-hmm. He quickly went by the wayside. I voted for him even though he was basically out of it by the time the Georgia primary came along. But this, you couldn't deny what was going on with Trump.
Yeah.
And then little things along the way, and of course he was constantly saying the wrong things, putting his foot in his mouth. Then all that crap came out about the Access Hollywood tape, and I'm like, holy crap. Then I think it was a day or two after that is when he made the comment on mic at that rally.
Yeah.
We would love to see those emails from Hillary. So, Russia, if you've got them, please, God. Yeah. I laughed for 2 minutes solid on the air the first time I heard that. I couldn't stop. We had to take a break. I thought it was the funniest damn thing any politician had ever said on the road. And I said, based on that alone, I'm voting for this guy. I don't have any problem. And, again, he's the not Hillary candidate.
Yeah.
And, again, watching, I was sitting here in this chair all election night, live coverage, tape to tape, and it was one of the most entertaining evenings I've ever had in my life. I kept constantly saying, I'm going to punch up the MSNBC audio feed. Courtesy of MSNBC, you people have to hear this.
Mm-hmm.
And they were having nervous breakdowns.
Oh, they were melting.
It was, again, one of the funniest things. I do a morning commentary here every morning that I normally record the night before. Back in those days, I did. And I literally recorded myself laughing for 60 solid seconds. That was it. That's all I could do. I introduced it by, you know, insightful analysis of last night's Trump victory just after this. And it came back and for 60 seconds. It was the most natural laughter I'd ever had in my life.
I was at a service station getting a tire changed, and this old guy pulls in his Mercedes red convertible, and he says, who are you voting for? Just off, random, just who are you voting for? And I said, well, I think right now I'd probably look at a Ben Carson or a Ted Cruz, and he said, this is a guy right here, and he points to his bumper, and he's got a Trump bumper sticker on there. And of course, at the time, I'm like, come on, old man, you don't know what you're talking about. I mean, that's a joke, right? But no, he's like, this is the future right here. You mark my words, this is the future. And lo and behold, but Trump won me over. I joke about Trump, and I joke about Trump on stage. He can take it. He loves it.
Oh, absolutely.
People think Trump's getting stressed out by all this stuff he gets. He loves it. If he didn't love it, he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't be sitting on the toilet at 3 a.m. tweeting out about, crazy Ted.
Sleepy Joe. At some point, though, and as much as I enjoy a lot of what he does, I do cringe into the bunker.
Of course.
Just shut up.
Well, every time, and I'll bring it up in every show, I'll say, you know, my wife always says he'd be great if he just wouldn't tweet.
Yeah.
And I have to agree that Trump would make a great silent movie.
Oh, he really would.
You know, it just do things and hush.
He just signed what? And where? How did he? Where the hell did that come from? Yeah. Oh, well, he's meeting with who?
But he's like a laser pointer to cats. You know, so he gets on Twitter and just drives them crazy. And it's not whatever you want to call it, presidential. It's not diplomatic. It's not statesmanlike. But America proved that they were sick of politics. At least 63 million Americans were sick of politics. And here's a guy who's completely immune to the PC culture. He hates it, and I hate it. and he doesn't care about the mainstream media. But think about what we would not know had Trump not been elected. Because let's face it, Hillary had it bought and paid for. It was a done deal. And he comes on the scene, and I love the fact that he, from the beginning, started calling out fake news. I love that. It's cringeworthy. But my gosh, you're paying attention to this. It's outrageous, the stuff that's being said to the press.
The very first thing that he said that made the press doubt his sanity, and that was when he announced to the world that his campaign had been surveilled by the FBI, that they were spying on him, that they were tapping his wires. An incredibly inarticulate way to put what happened. But it was what happened was he won, and they said, oh, hell, we got to tell him. Oh, he's the boss. Holy shit. We got to let him. Mr. President, can we have a word with you? And I can hear right now, you did what? You went what? What? Give me my Twitter.
That's exactly right. And now
you've got... Nobody believed him. No, this guy's nuts. He was right. You were wrong. Eat it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I want to say to every one of these idiots on the left that continue, well, he's clearly delusional. He's been proven time and time again to be right.
Well, that's the beauty of it. And he just throws it in their face. And it's you're watching a pure meltdown on the left, the mainstream media. It's fun to watch. And that's why. So here's my take on Trump is this. I don't see – Trump's not far right. I think if anything, and historically speaking, you look at his decisions, he's been just left of center. He's very moderate in the middle.
He's a pragmatist.
And I'll tell you this, he's been very smart in doing that because the people that hate him now, and we're seeing this with the, 22, 23 people that are running in the Democratic Party now, I mean, they're trying to out-fanaticize and lunacy each other, and they have to polarize themselves so much from Trump to make him look like a far-right extremist that they're jumping off the ledge on the left with things like reparations and basic income, you know, universal income and Medicare
free
for all and
for
free
everybody.
College. And that's what everybody's running on, this crazy nonsense, which is funny now. I mean, now it's almost a parody. Now you got Amy Horowitz who's going to, you know, raising the money and announce he's going to run on the Democratic ticket. And he's not even a Democrat.
No, not a bit. Not a bit. And the people on the left are trying to recruit someone in the Republican Party to take him on. Well, I think that lesson has been learned by those on the right that took a stand contrary to what Trump is trying to do. And I got to tell you, I have never been more disappointed or ashamed of any Republican leaders like I have been both Mitt Romney and John McCain.
Yeah, it's disappointing.
And you know, John McCain, I'm sorry he's passed away, but still, he did the wrong thing in the wrong way.
Well, the guy ran on the platform of repealing Obamacare and then gave a thumbs down. And, you know, the ACA situation, the health care deal, what ticked me off and what is evident proof that the Republicans knew that Hillary was going to win was they had 8 years to put something in place, a plan to repeal Obamacare, and then something that they could present. And when it time came, they had nothing because they knew Hillary was going in and there would be no repealing. And so, you know, these guys – And I love Lindsey Graham 2.0 now that McCain's out of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have to say that. Yeah. And I'm thrilled that three of my favorite Republicans, David Perdue, Senator from Georgia, Rick Allen, and Jody Heiss, who are congressmen from this area, are all new enough to where they can't be blamed for 8 years of promises and then no follow-through. And those three guys have lined up and done the right thing behind Trump. Trump's not broken a single promise.
Right.
There are many things that he wanted to do that the Republicans in charge of Congress wouldn't let him do. That's not his fault.
Yeah.
I mean, he really has been, in my lifetime, I'm 54, the best promise-keeping president ever.
Okay, so you go back to that point. So Glenn Beck was for lack of better terms, a never-Trumper, right? He was a Ted Cruz guy.
I personally helped get him thrown off his radio station because of that.
Yeah, he was very
really
outspoken about that.
And then welcomed him back when he...
And then he did. And so it's funny because Glenn, a year later, Glenn repented, for lack of better words. He repented and said, I was
Trump,
wrong.
Trump showed him.
Showed him. And so they did kind of a report card after he was in office for a year, and they went down the thing, and he said he's kept every promise that he's attempted to do everything that he's promised. And so it's funny, 2 weeks ago, Trump called Glenn Beck on the phone, and the White House called and said Trump wanted to talk to Glenn because it's kind of been some hard feelings.
Oh, big time.
Some
huge.
Hard feelings.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is so Trump. The White House calls, and they said, well, Glenn's in studio right now. Do we need to pull him out? And they said, no, just have him call back anytime this afternoon. The president's not doing anything.
Oh, jeez. Ooh, I don't think I'd have told that.
No.
Make up something. Yes, can he call at 3:07:30? Can we get him to call precisely then?
Yeah.
Well, the president can speak to him then. And then the president's looking at his watch saying, can we hurry up and get Glenn on the phone? That's hilarious.
But now Glenn, you know, Glenn's never been anything but gracious to me. And Glenn's Glenn. I mean, the world's ended 12 times, according to Glenn, already. So it's one of those things. That he was
you got your Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly.
And your gold and your...
Gone down to nothing, my GMR gold. But it's funny to watch this process because Trump came out and changed politics as we know it in America. No one can run without some form of suspicion as a politician anymore. I just think America was burned out on all of this stuff. And now we look back and we see the Bushes, we see the Obama administration and the Clinton administration, all these things. And you realize that it was like a pro wrestling match. Everybody fought each other, but then they got in the same limo and went to dinner after the deal.
Absolutely.
And everybody was in bed together. And Trump came in and said, no, we're not going to do this anymore. You know, when you punch him, he's a counterpuncher. Here's a billionaire mogul real estate building playboy from Manhattan, and you know, anybody that's from Queens, you know how people from Queens are. They're counterpunchers. They're going to knock you out. And here's a guy who's a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. I use that word loosely, but you know, he's not a Jew. He's not Italian. He's not black. He's not mafia. And what did he do in Manhattan to build this thing? I mean, he's a successful businessman. And I love now that they're coming out and they're saying with the leaked tax reports, they're saying, well, he lost $1.7 billion between whatever.
I'm laughing about that. Do they not understand what real estate depreciation
is
on a tax return?
He said it in his own book.
Back in those days, and, you know, when the real estate market was falling apart, it's incredibly... Derek used the term illiterate of them, but you're almost dealing with a business illiteracy when you're discussing these people. And somebody says, well, nobody lost as much money as Donald Trump did. Really? Why don't you ask GM how much money they lost?
Right.
And by the way, did Trump get a check from the federal government for $5 billion to get back on his feet? No, but GM did. I mean, and
it is funny that nobody's wondering what Obama was doing with his money in the 90s. You know, but they care about Trump. Why does it matter? He admitted it on The Apprentice. He admitted it in his book that he lost the money.
There's a meme floating around that makes more sense than just about anything. I would much rather have a politician who made billions, a billionaire who made billions become a politician than a politician who had nothing that somehow ended up becoming a millionaire.
Obama.
That makes sense. Well, not only Obama. And
Pelosi.
And to give Obama a little bit of credit, at least he was, you know, I think his net worth when he started running for office was $500,000.
Yeah.
Nancy Pelosi's a multi-gazillionaire.
Yeah, $121 million.
And where did it come from?
Yeah.
You know, since she has been a member of Congress, it's absolutely ridiculous. Got to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to ask Chad how he got started on all this. I mean, it's one thing to, have a great career when you're in your late 40s. You're not quite 50 yet. When you're in your late 40s, but how do you start doing this when you're 17, 18, 19 years old and not trying to figure out what you want to be when you grow up? Chad Prather is at the Miller Theater tomorrow night. There's still some tickets available. Get over to millertheater.com online to pick those up. And did you say that tomorrow night from the stage you will announce an after party?
Yeah, we decided off air where we're going to do an after party.
So I'm going to give my buddy a call. I'll make sure that
I hope they're ready because they're going to get some business. No, I can't believe there's still tickets left. What's wrong, Augusta? I mean, hometown boy came back.
Well, it's over 1,000 tickets. I mean, there's seats in that place. It's a big place.
1,232 is what we're selling.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to be there. Oh, goodness, I'm knocking things off the thing, Austin. You can't take me anywhere.
Did you break a radio station?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But we're going to have fun. It's going to be a big crowd. It's weird, though, coming in trying to tell funny stories to family and friends, and they're like, no, bro, we know you.
And they are probably the subject matter.
They are. So I have to really rethink the sets for tomorrow night because, yeah. Like on the road, I talk about getting out of Georgia. I had to escape the family business of meth and all that. My mother hates that joke, you know. My cousin that was arrested at a cockfight for selling chicken salad sandwiches without a food license.
The losers? Would you like a loser sandwich? They're very fresh, I promise.
Loser sandwich.
Wow, that's interesting.
Pretty good, Austin.
So you had... So you still have, again, your mom's here.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize this. One of Chad's brothers, Tommy, went to high school with me. Your other brother was a little ahead of me. He's a few years older than three or four. I think Pete's probably about 10 years older than me, I'm thinking.
I don't know. No. Because Tommy and Peter are they're the same age. They're right. Pete's a little bit older than Tommy, yeah.
Well, Tommy's 2 years older than me.
Is he? Yeah.
But Tommy ended up taking the girl that I was in love with in junior high school. She was never my girlfriend. Worshipped her from afar.
You're infatuated.
Christina.
Yeah, and, Christina.
He dated Christina for, I think, all through high school.
Well,
pretty
yeah.
much.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, by the time I was free, she wasn't, or she was free, I wasn't, or something.
Tommy and Pete both went off to, which at the time was West Georgia College, and now it's what, University of West Georgia, and Tommy played baseball there. Pete worked with the baseball teams over there, and Pete's still in baseball.
So I had no idea that those guys were your brothers.
Yeah.
They have different last names. And so when I was talking to a couple of folks about you coming through town, that's when I started getting all these messages. Well, you know, Chad knew your brother Bentley and good friends with Mac Taylor, and they started sending me all these pictures, and I'm like, holy cow.
Yeah, that's why I tell everybody in Augusta, if you want decorative brickwork, you got to call Meacham Masonry. That's Tommy's business.
That's right.
They do it, man.
So when was it that you decided that you were going to get performing a try?
So it was the end of 2015.
Wait a minute. No, I'm going back further.
Oh, further.
Because you were a baseball player in high school yourself.
So to me, playing baseball was a performance. I love playing baseball because you're in front of a crowd, you know, and we always had great crowds playing at Westside. And then, I always looked at that stuff. I was on stage as a kid with some plays with the Augusta Players.
What were you in?
Oh, things like A Christmas Carol and, you know, all the common ones that they do annually. And we would do that. And
they're your competition tomorrow night. Chitty, chitty, bang, bang.
Chitty, chitty, bang, bang over
right
there.
Across the street, yeah.
And then we would do, I got involved with drama while I was at Westside, and we would do things like the one-act play competitions all over the
place.
Who
was your teacher then doing that?
That was Mr. Barnwell. The late Robert Barnwell.
Never knew him.
Yeah.
We had Angel Capers when I was there, and we actually had to kind of reinvent the drama department because Naomi Williams, who was everything drama at Westside for years and years, retired, and Angel kind of took it over.
So. Funny to hear those names again.
Yeah, and Mr. Griffin, I guess, was your principal.
He was.
He was my principal at Tutt Junior High School.
Well, he was my... he was there...
Transition, I guess.
Yeah, 6th and 7th grade, he was there. Yep.
And I've got Chad Prather. I was going to say famous. He's more than famous. He's infamous.
Take that, Mom.
Conservative cowboy commentator. And what's funny is you really do have a cowboy background a little bit.
My uncle, my dad's brother, we have Prather quarter horses over in Camden, South Carolina. And then my grandfather, my late grandfather, on my dad's dad, he was the racetrack manager over at Springdale Racecourse in Camden.
So it's not an act. Chase.
Yeah.
It's not an act.
Well, it was funny because
Beach Boys. You actually wear the hat and do the...
The stuff. I mean, we have horses and we've got, you know, out there where we are in the Fort Worth area. But I went out to Fort Worth 20 years ago and I liked it because growing up here, obviously we got these 100-foot pine trees, and where I grew up, you had to look straight up to see the sky. And for a guy with, you know, ADD like me, I could see the sky in Texas, and I loved it. And so I said, I can breathe out here. And 6 months later, I moved out, and it's home. To me, it's the center of the universe.
Let me get back to your high school days, because, again, you were far more interested in baseball than you were in drama or performing or anything. And you were mentioning to me on the phone the other day, you caught a little hell for hanging out in the drama department.
I did.
Your buddies, Coach Barnes and the rest of them on the baseball team.
They'd give me a hard time, but then they'd come to the show, and they were like, damn, that's pretty good.
Well, we had a football player, Bo Baxter, who was a year ahead of me.
Bo Baxter, yeah.
He never did anything with us in the drama department because he was busy playing football and hanging out with the sports guys, and all was fine and good. And he decided after he got out of college that being an actor is kind of fun, and he's got a career now. He's in New York. He's been on shows like, House of Cards. He was a featured player on the David Letterman late night show.
Right.
They would pick him out of the crowd. And anyway, had no idea that he had any interest in that at all. And, you know, I asked him, Bo, why didn't you ever hang out with the folks that were actually putting on plays? And you could have gotten a little experience and maybe started a little sooner. And he said, it didn't even occur to me.
Yeah, it's funny how that goes. And so for me, I would, you know, I always kind of wanted to be a talking head. I just have kind of always had that gift of gab, and I'd ride down the street and I'd see these billboards with guys like you on it and all the folks from the news. And I'd say, I could do that job if I could have the chance. I could run my mouth. I could read a prompter or whatever. And I thought, there's just no opportunity to do that. But I found it in social media. And again, just sitting in the truck, and people say, why'd you do it in the truck? Well, I used to sit in traffic, and I just pop a video up on Facebook for people to watch. And then then I realized I could control the sound, I can control the lighting, and nobody bothers me sitting in the truck. And so it kind of became a thing.
How scripted are those?
They're not. So what we do is, it used to be completely 100% off the cuff. Then I realized, because we crossed a 2 billion mark in views on Facebook alone in 4 years, and so I realized with that many eyeballs on it, I really needed to be careful with my foot and mouth disease. And so I will take about five points I want to make.
I got to stop here just a second.
Yeah.
I'm in this business, and mm-hmm. I do a commentary every morning, which is usually between 60 and 90 seconds, that has the occasional, don't stutter, you don't stammer.
I've worked really hard on not. And so
hesitation.
So, for instance, I used to take.
You're making it up as you go.
So I'll take about 5 points that I want to make, and then I'll put some meat on the skeleton as I'm going. So I've worked really hard on talking fast without the ums and the uhs. I worked really hard on not stuttering over things and the elocution and the articulation and different things like that. So I took Greek in college, and I would, my Greek professor, I used to rattle off the Greek alphabet. I still can. It just blast right through the thing, and it's kind of a fun party trick, right? And people would say, what in the world? And my Greek professor used to say, one of these days, you're going to be slumped over a wheelchair in an old folks' home just reciting alphabet of demogut, you know, doing this stuff, humming to yourself. But I would practice all of these things for years, and my brain works about 5 seconds in front of my mouth. So when I go into that mode, I kind of feel like the fast-talking disclaimer person at the end of the car commercial.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I patterned things after. And it became the shtick because my goal, Austin, was to say as much as I could in 60 seconds. And then Facebook, which was great as a model, but then Facebook changed the algorithm where they target 3-minute videos. It's hard to do that for 3 minutes, but we're doing it.
So they keep a 3-minute video in place mm-hmm. versus a 1-minute video.
Well, now because they want to put ads on them and monetize them.
They want to put ads in the middle of them.
They want 1 minute in, they want to do. So if you don't have at least 3 minutes, they can't find an ad break at the 58-second mark.
So
it's a pain,
I wasn't even aware that they do that. So right this minute, if you were to post a 3-minute Facebook video that starts getting hits, Facebook will arbitrarily put an ad in it?
Yes.
Wow.
So people will ask me.
So you could be sitting there talking about Donald Trump in China, and all of a sudden you see the little banner pop up. Let's talk a little bit about Charmin toilet paper.
Or Planned Parenthood. I mean, you have no choice in anything.
Wow. So I did not know they did that.
So we're at a point now with our view count, we get pretty quality. We get good quality ads. It's not just some mom and pop thing. We get really big name brands on there. And the point with all of that is we finally got to a place where we started making money off of Facebook. And everybody thought they just think you get YouTube rich. It's pretty hard to do. And do it Facebook that way.
Do you keep up with that culture? Because it's, I mean, 90% of it's gamers.
I do. YouTube has become almost impossible.
You familiar with Dan TDM?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My son loves Dan TDM.
I don't understand that world at all, but I see it, and I'm fascinated by it when you have these 16-year-olds out there that have 4 Ferraris.
To give you an idea, my son and his mother went to Atlanta to see Dan TDM at the Cobb Center, 7,000 people.
That's crazy.
Talking about gaming.
So in the studio here with us is one of my camera guys and producer of my show, Sean Hernandez. He just did an event in Dallas. They've had probably 1,200 people in an auditorium watching gamers play live, and they were cheering as though they were in the Super Bowl. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Were you there working, or were you there as a fan?
Yeah, he was filming.
He was filming, okay.
He was filming.
Because I was going to say he looked like he actually had been on a date or two in his life, so.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good-looking guy,
It wouldn't be like he was there as a fan. Understood.
But he was posting it on his Instagram, and I was seeing this stuff, and it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life.
That is
just
bizarre.
Just bizarre.
So when you were back in high school and you had these inclinations, but mm-hmm. you worked a little bit with community theater. You know, back when I was at Westside, the teachers would grab me. Anybody that had Mr. Timms, who was the vocational guy, they had a vocational state competition that included public speaking and extemporaneous speaking. And because he knew that I was in the literary meet, he grabbed me.
Hey, boy, I hear you pretty good talking. Yes, sir, I guess so. Why don't you come and participate? You can represent Westside High School. And I won state title. And
that's what happened with me. So Miss Beauchiers, she would put
Beauchiers,
me.
Beauchiers, love her dearly. Yeah,
absolutely. She was great. And she would put me on the academic decathlon teams, not because I was smart, but because I could speak. And I won the gold every year in speech. I would write. I always would win a bronze or silver medal in essay, even though I had no idea what I was talking about. I was just good at BSing. But I was blessed. I was like, we had to do an essay on 2001 Space Odyssey. I never saw the movie or read the book, and I came up with some philosophical jargon about what the movie was all about, and I won a bronze medal on the thing.
Did you ever hear of Naomi Williams?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
I actually got an A+ in her class because she was looking for unique interpretations and or unique observations pertaining to anything Shakespearean.
Yeah.
So, walked in, no preparation at all. She says, Mr. Rhodes, your turn will be. And I, neither a borrower nor a lender be. Do not forget, stay out of debt. And I continued on, and she gave me an A+. The class erupted. Do you know what I've just done? I just sang to you the Hamlet clip from Gilligan's Island. Ripped it straight off.
Yeah.
Remember that?
That's
when
awesome.
Gilligan played Hamlet and they turned it into a musical, she had no idea.
She didn't
Williams
know.
Was far too cultured to have ever watched Gilligan's Island. So, so I'm with you, Chad.
I mean, no, I did.
I'm beginning to think you and I are related somehow.
Yeah, my Emily Gaddy was my Emily Salmon now, but she was my senior English teacher, and she had done her student teaching under Emily Ludwig, that's right. Al Ludwig's daughter.
I know Emily well, yeah.
So, and we're still friends to this day, and so she was my... You know, it was like being in school with somebody. She was like a peer because she was only 5 years older than me at the time. So,
well, you had Lisa Fry too as a teacher.
Sure did. Yeah. I never actually had Lisa, but Jason and I, of course, her
it was
brother
Ms. Weathered then, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. I never had her actually as a teacher, but yeah, she was there teaching when I was there. And
did you have Ms. Heilig?
I did.
Yeah, I know all these people.
Sure.
Yeah, they were all friends of mine.
It's amazing how, you know, I was telling someone the other day talking about Miss Law. You know, we used to sing the Pink Floyd song, Brick in the Wall. We used to call it Tick on Miss Law.
Wow. So they did draft you to do these things.
They did. And I was always blessed with a really decent memory. I mean, I can read something and pretty much own it pretty quick. And so... If I do that, I can recall things pretty fast. And so I just kind of built a shtick out of it. But, you know, back to your original question, I had a comedian friend of mine. He said, why don't you take this show on the road and sell tickets and make money off of it? Because I kind of had lightning in a bottle, but I didn't know what to do with it. And I said, well, I'm not a comedian. I'm not a joke teller. I'm a storyteller. And he said, so get on stage and tell stories. People laugh, you know. And I've always respected the craft of comedy, so I didn't come in and so I always say these things, and I work with other comedians over the years, and they say, yeah, but you kind of are a comedian. I mean, you have the comedy chops. I just didn't have to dig through and wade through the minutiae of the comedy clubs. I had a built-in audience, you know, the smoky bars and the hecklers and the drunks and all that kind of stuff. I didn't have to deal with all of that in the trenches.
Well, you've worked with Ron White.
Yeah.
And Ron didn't tell jokes.
Exactly.
He tells stories.
Exactly. So you compare those. Larry the Cable Guy, Dan Whitney, is a friend, and he's a joke teller. You know, he's a one-liner.
And he
can just do it after another.
There's nothing in the world more fun than to listen to him speak in his regular voice.
I know.
After he's done Larry the Cable Guy for, you know, 20, 30 minutes.
It really kind of freaks you out.
It does.
It kind of freaks you out. You know, and he's a great guy. I hear from him monthly. And Reno Collier, who opened for Dan for all the years, you know, he and I have done some shows together. I heard from Reno just yesterday, funny guy. But no, Ron's a storyteller, but his timing is impeccable. And you go back and listen, because when Ron White got started, he would be doing, you know, he's from Texas, and he's out there in his cowboy hat, missing a tooth, smoking a cigarette. And you can hear, if you go back and listen to the old albums, Ron's telling the same stories he tells now. But it's amazing how over 20 years it evolved into what Ron White is now.
Now he's erudite.
Very much so. Yeah. I could tell some funny Ron stories, which we definitely don't need to get into.
What happened to him and his... what happened to Ron and his last wife?
His last wife, Marco.
Because
he spent 6 months trying to convince everybody they were never actually married.
Well, I mean, that's... I was going to ask you, because he bragged about her so gently and so wonderfully for some reason.
You know, Ron's hard to live with. I'll tell you, so Ron... Colt Ford... I don't know if y'all know this. Do I have time to tell this story?
That's it. We got
to
take a break.
Let's take a break. Let me tell you this story.
Starting to hear from some of the skeletons in your closet there, Chad.
Oh, sweet Lord.
Yeah. Let's see. Joey Barksdale.
Joey.
Joey says, looking forward to seeing Chad tomorrow night. Tell him I was going to call into the show and share a few baseball dugout stories, but I can't do that with his mom listening.
Joey's funny. Joey threw the ball 102 miles an hour when he was 17 years old, and he hit a lot of fans. I saw Joey play center field one time at Westside, and that's a 350-foot. That's the old field that's gone now. Joey caught a ball in center field, deep center field. He had the best arm, and just a gift from God, right? And he hauled off and threw that thing to home plate. It went over the backstop at Westside.
Wow. He
sailed it.
Have you been over there since they built the stadium?
Yeah.
So you've seen the new football stadium?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I've been over there. Yeah, I like to go over there and visit. You know, we got the home plate right there in the track, where the old home plate was.
Absolutely.
And, you know.
Did you know that Gerald Barnes' son is now the baseball coach at Greenbrier High?
I know, at Greenbrier. That's crazy. And
my wife's a teacher there, so.
And, you know, Coach Barnes was always a huge influence in my life, and you know, they just don't do things anymore these days the way they used to do it. You know, with Coach Finley and Coach McRae and those guys, they jerk you up. I mean,
people would be indicted. That's right.
And so, but I, you know, I ran into
was Jimmy Dukes the assistant principal when you were there?
No,
Mr. Dukes.
It was Mr. Williams was there.
Mr. Dukes was the toughest hombre around, and you didn't want him ever to be in your grill about anything. Yeah. Tommy can tell you stories.
Yeah.
About Mr. Dukes. Well, let me tell you a fun little thing about Mr. Dukes. No-nonsense guy. He was built a tight end back in the old NFL days, in that he was kind of short and stocky, but he was tight. And he always wore a three-piece suit. Looked like he just stepped off a TV show, cop show set.
Right.
And you never wanted to cross swords with him. I mean, he was just a guy that, you know, no nonsense. And I never thought much of him because he was always the disciplinarian. Thank God I didn't have too much to deal with him. But he didn't seem to have any knowledge that academics were going on in the building.
Right.
He was there to kick butts.
Right.
Found out just a few years ago that he was part of a group when he was in college called the 100. That basically occupied some very racist businesses down in downtown Augusta at the height of the civil rights movement. Hmm. And rather than acquiesce to basically being bullied around, they went and got 100 young black men to basically go sit at the counter at Woolworths and whatever.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he was one of, I say 100? See, when it went 100, it was like a dozen of them.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of those guys. And he never said a word. He never lifted a finger against anybody, but he was definitely somebody that you looked at and you want to mess with. And I gained more respect for him. I said, I had no idea that he was part of that movement. And we all always kind of disregarded him as a, you know, the enforcer
right.
at Westside High School. Who in the world knew that just 20 years before he was dealing with me, he was literally putting his life on the line to change life for black folks in Augusta, Georgia.
You know, whenever you're growing up and you get these teachers that are and coaches that are influential on your life, and you don't realize as a kid that these people had a life too.
Oh yeah,
and they've had their own influences and had their own, you know, just crazy stuff that you learn about people that when you become an adult and you look back and you're like, I really should have treated them better.
Oh, and not only that, why didn't they kill us?
Exactly.
Because Lord knows they could have gotten away with it back in those days.
Yeah.
They had incredible patience.
Yeah.
They really did. I got to take a quick break. We'll do that. Continue with Chad, who will be at the Miller Theater tomorrow night. 7 o'clock is when you kick things off, or 7:30, you know?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
Showtime.
All right. So get out to the website, check out the available seats, and buy them up. Our Friday anthem, and I know that Chad remembers the late, great Dick Shannon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. This was Dickie's theme song heading in on Friday afternoons over at the old WBBQ, and then later when he came to work for us over at the oldie station. And we absolutely love Dick. God bless him. He passed away a few years ago, and every Friday now we play this in his honor for at least one segment coming back. Chad Prather is with us in studio. He will be at the Miller Theater tomorrow night, and show starts at 7 o'clock. Still a few tickets available online. Get on over there. I've got a pair of tickets I'll be giving away in just a few minutes,
sweet.
So stay tuned for that. Mike, let's get a couple of calls in. Some patient folks been hanging out. Let's see what they have to say. You ready? All right. John and Thompson, you're on the air with the Austin Road Show and Chad Prather. Go for it.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'm enjoying the show, and I'm glad to be in the presence of your distinguished guest.
My goodness.
I like you already.
It's Chad Prather, you know.
I hope my mother's listening.
Let me tell you guys something. I grew up on the foundation of Christianity, and my understanding of kill and hate are different than most of the world. You know, kill everybody with kindness and hate to miss the opportunity to do so. And it kills me, both Republicans and Democrats, that hate Trump or hypocrites in the Christian world. And God forbid what Stacey Abrams said about what Kemp did about the unborn infant to be diabolical and evil, to keep them alive, to give them some form and shape of life, is beyond me. How could that woman or anybody following that woman have any kind of understanding of love?
John, you got a question in there? Yeah, and I agree with your point. Do you have a question in there?
No, just a statement of facts.
Yeah. Let me play off of that. And sure. Thank you for the call. But let me play off that with Chad. Chad, what do you think of the Republicans that to this day reject or want to stand against what Trump is trying to do? Not his personal behavior, his tweets, but you know, Mitt Romney is an obstructionist at this point.
Yeah. So you know, I can't think of a single decision that Trump has made or anything he's enacted that hasn't been pro-America. You know, the guy does believe in nationalism. He believes in America first. When did those become bad words? I don't understand. And so you know, when he talks about the border wall and people want to accuse him of being a racist and they take his words out of context, these are things that politicians on the left and the right have been talking about for 35 years, that we need more border security. So, and then you have people come on CNN, like the lady the other night who's with Chris Cuomo, and says that the fetus inside of a woman's body is not a human being. I mean, these people have gone absolutely nuts on this stuff, and it's only the rhetoric's only going to get worse and worse. But to your point, yeah, you got a lot of folks out there, these just politicians. They're rhinos, obviously, but I mean, they're just politicians. They're just anti-Trump, and no matter what the guy does, they're going to come out against him. And until it's a scary thing. It really is. They're just anti-Trump. You know, the Democrats are running on the platform of Orange Man is bad, and that's the only thing they've got. They're not producing any form of policy.
And in the meantime, you're having to deny the business reality that's playing out in front of you right now, the incredible economic success this country has had in the last 2.5 years. And again, people can say what they want to about, well, Obama set the theme going, and he
nonsense.
Got everything in motion. It is nonsense.
Nonsense.
Because what are the Democrats running on? Yeah. Higher taxes and more regulation. You want to bring the economy to a screeching halt.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the mailman coming to the door. It's not even going to take an election of a Democrat. All it's going to take is the thought that a Democrat may be elected and the economy's going to go down.
Well, and somebody like Mitt Romney, I mean, who cares about Mitt Romney's opinion? The guy ran the worst, weakest, limp-wristed campaign imaginable against Obama and lost. So who cares about Mitt Romney's opinion? You know, what I appreciate is the guys who have stepped up. You know, your Dan Crenshaw's, newly elected guys that have come in there, your Ted Cruz's, your Rand Paul's, and folks who have come behind Trump, your Lindsey Graham, who finally woke up to reality and said, hey, we need to be on the winning team. Some of those folks who have come in and been pursuers of truth. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. You know, these folks are just, they're Teflon. Nothing sticks to them when they come out. I mean, I can't believe the stuff that the left has gotten away with. But to aid that and call yourself a Republican is disgraceful.
Mm. Joel's standing by, and I think Joel's a fan of yours. Joel, how you doing?
How's it going, Austin? What's up, Chad?
What's up, Joel?
I just wanted to get some idea about other people you've discussed about ideas on your show, such as the great, well, quote-unquote great, Andrew Heaton and Matt Kibbe as well, people who are libertarian. And do you think there is a chance that at some point, with many youth today not being fans of Trump, there could be a chance that the Libertarian Party takes away the spot from the Democrat Party and becomes a major second party at some point?
I tell you what, Joel, I tell people all the time that I miss good liberals. And what I mean by that is good JFK liberals, because liberals aren't liberals anymore. They've gone leftist. They've joined the cult and drank the Kool-Aid. You know, a classical liberal, like Matt Kibbe, you bring up his name, he would consider himself a classical liberal, and he calls himself a libertarian. To your question, I'm not sure we're there yet. Could be interesting. I've always said that if a good libertarian came along and would just do what Trump is doing, procedurally in terms of what he's enacting and passing, but be a little more diplomatic, they'd probably win hands down.
And arguably, Trump is a libertarian.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. I said arguably. I didn't say
arguably.
Literally.
I personally, like, if you were listening to the show, I personally think Trump is left of center. I think on a personal and political level, I think he's left of center. I think he's got common sense, and he's very, what do you call him, a pragmatist?
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. Andrew Heaton, calling Andrew Heaton a libertarian, he's a raging liberal. I kid. He's a good buddy of mine. Andrew calls himself a left of center libertarian, but, you know, the jury's out.
Mm, yeah, and also bridge builders such as Ben Shapiro, he's not only was strongly against Trump, he's like, I think he's gotten an attraction to many young people, such as myself, because he was not for Trump, per se. But he's not, like, anti-Trump, such as Ballas John Kasich.
Yeah, well, you know, Ben is going to be a guy who's going to come out and pursue logic and reason and facts above everything else. I think he's been, in some cases, unfair with Trump, but to each their own.
Joel, get out and see him tomorrow night. You planning on coming out?
Yeah, I already got my ticket ready, and I'm hoping to go to that after party.
Oh, you'll be there, Joel.
Okay. Go see him, shake his hand. All right, hang in there.
No problem. Thank you, Joel.
Doug in Augusta. Let's see if we can get Doug in here real quick. Doug, you're up. Go for it.
Chad, I've not seen you since the 20-year reunion.
Thibodaux, Louisiana.
My man.
What's up, baby?
What's happening?
I figured you'd be out on a golf course.
Which Doug is this?
Doug Coleman.
Ah.
That's awesome.
I'm coming to the after party.
Yeah, you better be.
All right.
We're going
to. Austin, I just wanted to say, for people who don't know Chad, he was always the most articulate guy in the class. He didn't always use it for the right reasons, but he always was.
Doug, why didn't you guys tell me he was from Augusta? I knew his work. I had no idea that this was the Chad Prather that everybody knew back at Westside in the day.
Yeah, it's one of those things, he's kind of, we try not to claim him too much, We try to hide him.
I was beginning to wonder.
We're proud as we can be.
That's a lot of history. Am I going to see you tomorrow night, Doug?
You are. You better. We're going to be right in the, we got good seats. You'll see us.
Are you playing golf tomorrow with Turner and
me
Barksdale?
And John and Joey, we're all going to be there.
I wish I could make the golf round, but
we'll see.
I'm too busy being successful,
really
Doug.
Looking forward to it, and we'll find you afterwards.
Good.
All right, Doug. Thank you.
But, hey, it's great talking to y'all, and thanks, Austin, for having them on.
Absolutely,
you, brother.
Pleasure.
See you, Chad.
So, do you have kids, Chad?
Five.
Five children.
Yeah, and a vasectomy.
How? Not in that order, but
I only like three of them at any given time.
How old are they?
21, 19, 15, and my son's 12, and my stepson's 12.
Okay, well, by the way, have you become the parent that you swore you'd never become?
I'm pretty cool. I'm cool, but
every now and then, like, for instance, great example, and by the way, since you're a baseball player, I got to run this past you. Now, all you people that witnessed my breakdown last night, I want you to hear from a baseball player how right I was. My son's a little league player.
Right.
Two games in a row, I've screamed loudly at umpires.
Yeah.
Tuesday night, player on third, tight game. We were down by one, two outs, runners at second and third. Kid hits a what's going to be a fielder's choice. They come home with it. The throw was high. The kid slides head first into home plate. The tag come down obviously late. Home plate umpire safe. Woo! We tied the game. Yeah. All of a sudden, the umpire from second base starts walking in. And uh-oh. What happened? Somebody leave early or something? All of a sudden, there's this little conversation. You see this. Runners out. Game over. And they're walking off. And I'm like, based on what? I mean, louder than I've ever yelled in my life. Everybody turns around, looks at me, and I want to know. Wait, based on what? In that league, you're not allowed to slide head first.
Oh, wow.
So lost the game on that. As soon as the rule was explained to me, I calmed down, and it was pretty quick. Somebody said, they can't slide head first. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right. The one last night, though, got me. This one got me. Kids on first base. Ball's hit like to the third baseman. Throw the ball to the second baseman. All he has to do is catch the ball on second base, forced out. The ball gets there a half step before the runner does. The umpire says, out. Literally, as he's saying out, the ball pops out of the glove. It was never in the glove. Boop! On the floor. And he says to the runner, out. The runner, very obediently, starts taking a couple of steps off second base. Whereas the umpire sees the ball on the ground, realizes he never had the ball, he goes, safe! And then the kid picks up the ball and tags the player with it because he has been told he's out and he's walking away.
Oh, my gosh.
And I said, wow, that's your fault.
Yeah.
He got off the base because you called him out. He was being obedient. Yeah, that's your fault. Cuddle up. He was explained, had explained to him five times what he had done.
Wow.
That S son of a gun refused to correct himself. I cannot stand somebody making a mistake all day long.
Yeah.
But it's on the umpire when he calls a kid out and he blew the call and the kid's rightfully walking away. That's a timeout. You stop the game right there.
So my wife is like you at the games. She holds on tight. I mean, very, very tight. She will jump somebody's butt real fast over something like that. And so years ago, I did a video in the truck about the phenomena, which is the Little League parent, and how these people will just hit the fence like the zombies on The Walking Dead. I mean, they will come after those umpires ready to eat their face off.
Yep.
And, you know, it's amazing how wrapped up they get into something that really lacks so much skill and fine motor. You know, these kids are out there slinging balls
eight, 9 years
all over
old,
the deal.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not good baseball, but these parents are just holding on tight. So, pretty funny, really. I sold a bunch of T-shirts. I did a thing about this woman who loves her dog, and she's a single, happy woman, and then she gets married, and, you know, the dog is the center of her life. You know that person who's that's her child. You know, I have a canine child. I hate hearing that stuff. So, and then she gets married, and she has a kid, and all of a sudden that kid, it becomes the center of her universe. Forget the dog. You know, now, you know, she's got the kid out there, and he got him in Little League, and that's her life is consumed. And so I did these T-shirts called Poor Fifi. Because there's Fifi out in the rain, you know, the Fifi lived, you know, she fed him from the table and the whole thing. And now Fifi's forgotten because the kid is the center of her universe. And so I sold a ton of these T-shirts called Poor Fifi. But that's those Little League moms, man. My wife is one of them. She's brutal.
Well, it's just, you know, the kids base so much of their own self-esteem mm-hmm. out of doing the right thing on the field. And when it's taken away from them by an adult,
I agree.
You damn well ought to know better.
I agree.
And again, a bad call I would never argue with. I might say, oh, man, you missed it. But I'm not going to get mad about that because that happens. But when you're so dumb that you don't realize you are the one that caused the issue and you don't fix it.
My wife would have cut his throat.
Well, I wanted to. I had a parent from the other side come up and get in my face about yelling. I said, hey, you want some more? I said,
you want some more?
I said, hey, it can happen. My wife actually fussed at me at a football game for calling out somebody that was targeting our kid. And she, you need to calm down. You need to calm. Very next play, it happened again. I'm going to kill that kid if you don't get him up. My wife did that. I'm like, please, don't do that. I'm going to get the referee.
It's very stressful. I take blood pressure medicine now.
Because of that?
Yeah, but all because of my wife.
Oh, well, that works too.
Yeah.
Just this morning, we were talking about the statistics with husbands and wives and who outlives each other. You know, husbands usually die about 7 years before the wives do. You know why that is? Because they want to.
They got
to
get relief.
Chad Prather will be on stage at the Miller Theater tomorrow, 7 o'clock. Get what few tickets are left available. You can get them online at millertheater.com, and I'll be giving away two of them in just a few minutes, so stay tuned for that. Do you have to bail out here? Because I'm having fun.
I'm going to hang for a little bit. Having fun, too.
So
you'll have me. I'll stick.
Absolutely, I will. Oh, we got a few minutes before we hit the news at the top of the hour. Just real quick, you were going over your baseball career at Westside. Did you attempt to play at Georgia when you went there at all?
Yeah. I had a brief career there. It was
What got you there? I mean, why'd you stop?
I just kind of got burned out, you know. And so I played. Baseball at Westside was a lot of baseball. And folks that were here, you know, Evans was a lot of baseball. You played 120 games in the summer for summer league, and then you right. And we loved baseball. I mean, we lived it, ate it, breathed it, the whole thing. But at that point, I think I had two scholarship offers to go to Clemson, turned them both down to go to Georgia and walk on, all because of a girl. And by the time I got to Georgia, we weren't together anymore.
Oh, no.
But I'm glad I went to Georgia.
Not nearly as much fun watching football this past year as Clemson had, but I get your point. Just out of curiosity, your kids, you raised them in Texas. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about sending them back here for college
education? My two oldest girls are in two different colleges in Alabama, two different universities in Alabama, which
didn't
I won't
quite
name.
Make it back to Georgia.
No, you know, and I'm proud of them. My girls, my three oldest are my girls. They're all in the arts. They're my 19-year-old. She's at a university on a dance scholarship, which is awkward because I'm like, that's not a major. That's, you know, let's throw in a marketing or business deal in there. But, you know, she's like, well, you have an entertainment career. And I said, yeah, but that's not what I went to school to do. And so, you know, it's fun raising kids. But I'm proud of them. Super smart kids. My son just got third in the state in mathematics. He's going to the Nationals, and I don't know where that kid came from.
All right, when we come back, I'm going to get your point-blank opinion on the future of Donald Trump and also what the best move should be for the Republicans as we get into this election process. Should they continue to support him like Lindsey Graham has kind of come around to do, or is he becoming too dangerous to support? It's a good question. Chad Prather is in Augusta at the Miller Theater. Having a great time off mic here, getting some good background stories on some of the top names in comedy that Chad Prather has gotten to know through the years. And you keep referring to Larry the Cable Guy by his real name. And without getting too personal with it, what's it like hanging out with Larry the Cable Guy when he's in full regalia?
He's fantastic.
It must be like hanging out with Mickey Mouse or something.
It's a little odd because you're used to hearing the voice. Right.
Yeah,
and you're used to hearing the accent and that, and then all of a sudden this guy who is truly an intellectual.
Oh, he's brilliant.
Emerges and you're like, who am I talking to? I mean, it's surreal, you know, when you get around him and you're like, this is a real guy who.
And when he's not wearing the hat and the shirt and the whole nine yards, you don't recognize him.
No. And so, you know, for the longest time, he did comedy as Dan Whitney. But then, you know, the Larry the Cable Guy came around by doing call in to the radio. And he would call in and do these different characters. And so Larry the Cable Guy kind of stuck. And it became a thing. And it just a humble, humble guy. I mean, just a sweet, humble guy with a, you know, $75 million in the bank right now in a private jet.
And we were talking about the fact that both he, or actually all three, he, Engvall, and Foxworthy don't have to work nearly as hard as they used to because they've made all that money and they've got, you know, families that they're trying to.
Well, Ron said he's down to he makes a quarter of his salary now because he has to pay all the ex-wives.
Well, I was going to say, what you folks don't realize, the reason that Ron White's the guy that's working harder than any of those is not because he wants to.
Right.
He's got overhead like nobody's business.
Well, I love what Ron says. He's like, you guys bought me that private jet, and I'll have it even when it's sitting out back behind my trailer with weeds growing through it, and I'm sitting in the cockpit going, push me around some.
That's it. Said, I may not be able to afford a car, but I'll damn sure have that airplane outside, no doubt.
They're good guys.
And unfortunately, again, going through a nasty divorce with his last wife. Think he'll ever get married again?
I hope he doesn't. I hope he doesn't. He does not have a good track record.
Now, have you opened for him?
No, I haven't opened for him. It would be an honor to, but, you know, I've done a few things with those guys, and they're just a wealth of knowledge. And, you know, I mean, Ron was doing comedy for 30 years before he got big.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, he was 25 years in, living down in Mexico. He had given up. They wouldn't even let him come back into the comedy clubs in the DFW area in Texas because he made everybody so mad.
Such a notorious drunk.
Yeah, and so finally, you know, he gets a call down in Mexico from Foxworthy. Anyway.
That's great, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I was asking you before we went to break a little while ago about the political future of Donald Trump. And, you know, I never thought in a million years after he got elected that we would be sitting 2.5 years into this presidency with a chance in hell that he'd be reelected. I thought it was a fluke. But as we sit back and we watch the success of the economy, and there's not a single political decision that he makes, plenty of personal decisions, plenty of communications decisions that he makes that we all second guess. When it comes to the political choices he's made, did you hear the latest today about the Supreme Court, about the federal court system?
Yeah.
It's brilliant, and I've been saying it for years, but he's the first president that's ever articulated. He says, I'm the president. When you have an issue with me, it's going to go to the Supreme Court. Either you're going to appeal it or I'm going to appeal it. Let's just go straight there.
Yeah.
Let's cut out the middleman.
Put it all
boom,
out.
Let's go. Most brilliant common sense move ever.
Yeah.
And again, Donald Trump saying it.
You know, you have to give credit to some people that are around him, you know, and there's some odd characters like a Kellyanne Conway and a Brad Parscale and these guys, and whoever has his ear has done. And I love the fact that Trump has put people in place and then removed people, and then some people, they're there, and then they leave, and everybody looks at it and say, well, it's kind of a revolving door. And I'm like, no, he's just doing business. He's just doing business. To some degree, you look at it and you're thinking, well, he might could have picked somebody better for that, you know. But, you know, we live in a day and an age where you know all the cabinet members. You know who's doing this job and that job. Can you imagine? I mean, you couldn't do that 20 years ago. And now everybody's in the headlines talking about this stuff. But I think that if, to your point, I think if the economy stays strong, stays where it's at right now and continues growing, he can't lose in 2020. Now, I had dinner with one of my favorite economists, Larry Reed, the other night in Tucson, and I asked him, I said, how long do you think this economy is going to last? And he said, well, probably another year and a half. And I said, can we get past November of 2020? And he said, yeah, probably so. And I think that that's going to be – because you just can't fight the numbers.
Well, and you can't fight the numbers. And while I don't expect the growth to continue, there's no reason for it to go backwards necessarily. The one thing that will make it go backwards is if you announce that you're putting into the White House someone who wants to raise taxes and increase regulation.
Well, it'll be
the biggest – block in the world.
Several of the folks running for the Democratic ticket have said just in recent days the first thing they're going to do is get rid of the tax break, the tax cut. I said, that doesn't even make sense what you just said, that I'm going to get rid of the tax cuts. So, of course, they're going to raise taxes. I mean, Bernie's plan is outrageous. I mean, you're looking at these guys who want to institute full-blown socialism. They want everything for free.
Is it interesting to you, though, that the guy that is leading the pack by 30 points is the oldest, whitest, standard bearer of the Democrat Party? I mean, all the talk of, you know, new faces, new blood, women, minorities, here's the old white Joe that's leading.
Yeah, well, I mean, it definitely defies their logic when it comes to intersectionality, because for Joe to even have a chance, he's going to have to pick a Kamala Harris or someone like that.
Stacey Abrams.
Abrams, somebody of that nature, which is frightening. You know, Uncle Woke, as I like to call Joe, is not woke enough for the Democratic Party. You know, he gave that speech last week. It was very pro-America. Trump could have given the exact same speech, the same words, very pro-America, but it was so low energy. And people don't care. You know, you go to a Biden rally and there's 60 people all over 60, all white.
Have you been to a Trump rally?
Yeah. I mean, it's electric.
It's like going to a comedy show.
It's almost electric. Yeah, let me tell you something about Trump. Trump is a comedian in his own right.
No doubt.
And if people can't understand when he goes off script, his timing is impeccable. I mean, and that's the thing that really ticks people off, is they don't realize, they have no sense of humor. They don't understand that when he's being funny, I mean, he's really genius when it comes to that stuff. And here's a guy who you can tell when he goes off the teleprompter and you're like, oh, boy, what's coming?
Here it is.
What is coming? But it's a lot of fun to watch.
That must be frustrating, though, working close to him, knowing that you've prepared, you know, a nice speech that's going to cover all the bases. As a matter of fact, I had the great pleasure and honor a few years ago of attending a State of the Union address. It was still President Obama at the time. But I got to talk to a couple of the technical people and the press people that were setting up everything. And I said, how closely does the president stick to the prepared remarks? And they said, it's virtually every word, ...
Yeah.
Well, fast forward a couple of years later, the person who's in the same position, and it's the same person, as a matter of fact, because he's a technical person, handling it for President Trump, saying, you should see the drugs we have to take to be able to handle the pressure of, okay, where is he? Let's get back here. Oh, my God. He's skipping paragraphs. He's back here. He's back there. Yeah. He said, but it's funny, the State of the Union address is the worst possible place for him to do that because it's so structured. And he said he'll still do it. Yeah. He said, but that's the one time that he does his best to stay on script.
Yeah. I love to watch him. Trump won me over because I watched – early on, I watched his kids and his grandkids, and I thought, this is a good man. This guy, this family loves him. I mean, for all of his skins you know, sin scars and flaws. His family loves him. And maybe his ex-wife's not so much. But you know what? He's managed to keep a great relationship with the ex-wife.
Even Ivanka. And yeah. I mean, they haven't said anything bad about
him. No. And so, you know, you get on Twitter, and Twitter's a dumpster fire. I love it on there. I really kind of take the gloves off on Twitter. I really am trying to get banned. And because it's just a mess over there. But people are so delusional. I just did a video about Brian Sims in Pennsylvania. Who, of course, was attacking the kids and the elderly lady outside the Planned Parenthood just last week.
I played that clip 2 days ago.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's a joke. And then I went into a tirade about Trump derangement syndrome, which is a real thing. You know, so if you're going to look at tax cuts, if you're going to look at border security, if you're going to look at historic lows for unemployment amongst blacks and Hispanics, and you're going to have a problem with those things. And then you're going to pull things out of context. Like, I was in Florida watching live when he gave the speech after Charlottesville. And I heard what he said, and I know what they took out of context. And I said, he's going to get in trouble for what he just said, because they're going to pull that soundbite out when he says there were very fine people on both sides.
Oh, I said the same thing.
And if you take that out of context, it sounds horrible. But yep. If you read the full thing, what he said was there were also very bad people on both sides.
Well, what he's talking about is the issue of the Confederate memorial.
Right.
That's it. Not the neo-Nazis, not anything like that, the Confederate memorials. And I know there are good people on the side of keeping up the Confederate memorials, because my entire elder generation of family helped build those things and erect them. And you know, they felt very personally reverent about it.
Yeah.
They were members of our own family. I've got a tombstone on my property that the Department of Defense actually gave back to us, because the private was killed in the Battle of Malvern Hill in Civil War, representing the South. The Department of Defense had sent a tombstone down that had slightly incorrect historical information on it. They put him in Company C instead of Company A. Oh, and when it was corrected, they said, okay, here's your new tombstone. And I said, okay, have you ever tried to send a tombstone back? Doesn't work. And I said, well, what do you do? And they said, well, just keep it. Okay.
It's hard to erase the rock.
It's my backyard now, which is, we don't have trespassers anymore.
That's funny.
But it's really amazing to me, though, that there is such a disconnect with some of these people. They have no earthly idea how anyone can say anything honorable about a fallen Confederate soldier.
Yeah.
And it's hideous to think that they have Nazis on the side.
The biggest thing that bugs me is the revision of history and how history is being retold. And it's always, you know, the winners get to tell the story. That's the thing. So if you look at the Civil War, for instance, obviously the history books written by the folks who won the fight. And so you've had this revisionist history that's gone on for years, but now it's gone just to out and out falsehood and lies that are there. And so I get into these debates, and it's just ludicrous the things that people believe as fact. And you know, that's – so one of the videos I did years ago that went wildly viral on YouTube and kind of landed me on Fox News for the first time was one I called Unapologetically Southern, because back in those days, you know, the Confederate flag was getting a lot of grief, and the monuments were getting a lot of grief. And, you know, if you're from the South, you were automatically a racist. And if you called somebody sugar darling or dear, there was something, you know, you're being condescending and sexist towards women. And, you know, God forbid you're a white heterosexual Christian male from the South. You're now the most persecuted. I was with Brandon Tatum, who's a former police officer, outspoken political activist. You know, he's their urban development guy at Turning Point USA. Here's an African-American guy. He says, it's easier for me to be a black conservative than it is for you to be a white heterosexual male in America today. And so I said, you know, well, and I said, well, add a cowboy hat in a truck with a dog in the back seat, and it gets real tricky.
By the way, have you seen any of the biographical information on these two idiots that shot up the school in Colorado?
It's amazing how, yeah.
They're both left-wing nuts.
And one of them was transitioning as a trans, you know, whatever you call them, transgender.
I think it's a boy trying to be, a girl trying to be a boy.
I'm so confused.
Who? I don't know. All I can tell you is neither one of them are Trump supporters. If either one of them had been, we'd be hearing it all over the media.
Well, and there's a verified account, Dr. Julia Shaw, I guess doctor's her first name on Twitter. She's like, trans women are women, trans women are women. I said, you should fight one and get back to us.
There you go. Chad Prather will be at the Miller Theater tomorrow night. He's had a message here on the message line at 706-863-5800. Great decision having Chad Prather on the whole show. I'm out here doing yard work, listening. What a pleasure to hear both of you on the radio having a good time. Well, that's what it's all about.
That's awesome.
Glenn and Augusta standing by on line 3. Let's find out what's on his mind. Glenn, thank you for holding. What's up?
Hello, Austin.
Hey, what's up, man?
I got two things. I didn't call about Biden, but y'all got into it. I hope he does win the Democratic nomination. The man can't string five or six sentences together without saying something absolutely stupid. Like a few years back, he was at a rally, and he's praising this guy, Bill, who's in a paraplegic in a wheelchair. And when he finishes up, he says, "Where are you, Bill? Bill, stand up, Bill." And the guy's in a stinking wheelchair.
Yeah, the thought of he and Trump debating each other one-on-one would probably be the highest-rated political showdown.
The other thing I really called about, a couple of days ago in the news, it was Buttigieg, or however you pronounce his name, and his husband, this Jimmy Carter. Well, if he's the husband, does that mean Buttigieg's wife, or how does that work out?
Chasen's the wife. Chasen's the wife, and because he took Buttigieg's name.
You know, and the most disgusting, and this guy Sims, to show you what really a homosexual like, this guy Sims is a LGBTQ whatever activist, and he's showing the true nature of what that whole movement's about. Several years back, there was a murder in Atlanta where gay Methodist minister sliced his lover all up, you know, sliced him up good, and the reporter asked the detective, "Do you think this is a particularly gruesome murder?" He said, "No, just a typical homosexual murder."
I didn't know there was a such thing as a typical homosexual murder.
Is that a classification in homicide?
Glenn, that's a new one on me, man.
What?
A typical homosexual murder.
Yeah, it was on the news.
I'm sure it was. I've never heard it. It's okay.
The movie, The Garden of Good and Evil, that guy down there shot his prostitute young lover nine times in self-defense. And the most disgusting thing I can think of, and you can call it gay bashing, whatever, is what in the world would go on in our White House if we sent that, and that they would desecrate every room in the White House.
Glenn, I hate to break this to you, buddy. I think JFK beat them to it. It's been 50 years ago.
It's been desecrated since 59, my friend.
No, many times over. Many times over. And most recently, Yasser Arafat was waiting in the next room. I mean, it's been about as desecrated can be. However, I am very curious as to how the traditional voting bloc that's always supported the Democratic Party, and that's conservative religious black folks, how they're going to deal with an openly gay candidate.
Whether or not America's ready
do you remember what happened in 2008 in California with the gay marriage initiative? All the black voters that came out to vote for Obama voted against the gay marriage thing, and they couldn't believe it. It was the most frustrating thing in the world to the Democratic leadership.
Well, whether or not America's ready for that, the world's not. I mean, they're stoning gays in Brunei. You know, they're beheading and throwing off buildings in Yemen and Iran, and it's just ludicrous to think that kind of deal.
At the same time, though, I mean, because I've had to deal with this working in the fine arts community my entire life. I've got a lot of friends that are gay.
Sure.
I have absolutely no problem with anything they do in their private life. It's none of my business.
Right.
It's like whatever doing in my private life, it's none of their business. But we've got to understand that just, 15, 20 years ago, it was not only not allowed, it was flat out illegal to consider a homosexual marriage. And I think the country has come a hell of a long way. In a short period of time. Much faster than accepting women as equals. I mean, when you consider that, 1919 when women got the right to vote again? Still, up until very recently, women were always thought to be second-class citizens when it came to politics particularly or, you know, professional status. It just blows my mind how far we've come in such a short period of time. And it's got nothing to do with personal animosity. It's got to do with people being socially hung up.
Exactly.
Chad Prather's been sitting in with us. He is a conservative commentator who is known all over the world as common sense and funny as hell.
Yeah, I started out not to do comedy because I'm not a joke teller. I'm a storyteller, like I was telling you. And the people started equating me to like a Will Rogers or a Louis Grizzard. And I'm like, which was an honor to me because so many people didn't know who Louis Grizzard is. Every Georgian does or should know who Louis Grizzard is. And I'm like, well, I don't think I could carry their jock straps, but it's an honor to be called that, you know. And for me, it's just, you know, I was telling you, when I started doing these videos, it was just therapy for me because my wife used to tell me I need to go talk to a professional because she knew I was crazy. And for me, but I had no idea when I put a camera phone up on the dashboard of the truck, started talking to it, that millions of people were going to start watching this stuff. And it makes my mother nervous.
You're one of the few phenomenons on Facebook this way, not Facebook, excuse me, YouTube, that goes under your own persona. You got guys like Pittsburgh Dad. You ever see him?
Yeah.
He's hilarious. Or Bat Dad. Is it Bat Dad?
Dad. Yeah.
That guy, what he does is absolutely
hilarious. It's incredibly funny.
But as far as what Chad Prather does, you're up there as Chad Prather. You're not wearing a mask.
If I had known what I know now, then I probably would have done a stage name. Because let's face it, when things go viral.
It's marketing.
Well, when things go viral, I told my wife when the first video went viral, there was so much sudden attention. I said I felt like I'd opened up the front door and let everybody in the neighborhood come rummage through our underwear drawer. You're immediately hiding pictures of your kids. You'd go like, oh, my God, what are we doing? And so we were out pitching sitcoms last year in all the major studios in Hollywood. And one of my co-writers, Rob Long, who was executive producer of Cheers and a number of other shows and just a talented guy, he said, you know, if they pick this sitcom up and we go to script, we're going to have to scrub your Twitter account, right? We're going to have to go through it. I'm like, good luck, brother.
I've always wondered about, you know, Tim Allen made a big point about kind of taking on Hollywood and saying that, you know, the reason his show was sacked because he was conservative. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. Why hasn't the Fox Network, not Fox News, why hasn't the Fox Network gotten a hold of Dennis Miller and said 11 o'clock at night, it's you? Or
well, first of all, and I've talked to Dennis recently, and so, you know, he and I have talked about that, and Dennis doesn't have to work, and he doesn't really want to work unless he just wants to, you know. He's doing some things right now with Mark Stein where they're out doing some live shows.
Right, exactly, but you don't think the fire's in the belly.
Just doesn't have any desire. Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, I love Dennis. Dennis is, you know, that guy that, it's just intellectual comedy.
I believe if a conservative late night talk show host went forward saying, "Hey, I'm the anti Stephen Colbert," that they would become the Fox News phenomenon of that because they are the alternative, and I guarantee he'd be number one.
I agree with you.
He'd be the other.
And so there's an article that's coming out, I guess, this week in the Observer, in New York, whatever that paper is. Harmon Leon, who is a far left gonzo journalist, he's been on my podcast. He's out there, man. But he interviewed me for this article, and he asked, why aren't there conservative comedy talk shows that are out there? Why do they bomb? And I said, well, it's one, there's not a lot of talent who's willing to take that on. It's underfunded, and it just doesn't have a good look that holds on. But there's half this country that's being underserved by the entertainment industry. So that's why my goal, my podcast, we're building our new studio to look like a talk show, because our goal is to ultimately have something that we can syndicate out there with guests and things like that, with comedy writers, where we can have the sketch and the skits and those kind of things, music, the whole deal, and put that out there. So, you know, we're using a podcast as a platform to go out there, because that's the beauty of being on Blaze TV, is now we have all of the studio elements and the cameras and the talent behind the scenes, the production people, to make a thing like that happen.
Well, I really believe that, just like Fox News Channel did, there is a segment of the society that is underserved. They're insulted, not just underserved. They're insulted. They are ridiculed. They are assaulted.
But I will tell you,
every night at 11:30 by three networks.
Yeah.
ABC, NBC, CBS. Boom, boom, boom.
And God forbid there's ever an award show on, because that's just a political rally where all these sock puppets come out there and start chanting their mantras about how, you know, conservatives are bad and Trump, you know, bad, orange man bad, like I said earlier. But if you go to the Fox studios in Hollywood, it's definitely not the Fox News. I'm sitting there out there, and here comes Rupert Murdoch still waddling into work.
But they want to make money. I mean, above all else,
one would think.
Fox.
And that's the hard thing. So I know a lot of conservatives in Hollywood.
Because of Rupert's children now running things, you think they're going to get away from that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think. And plus, they've been bought out. So now, you know, they've got Disney.
That's 20th Century Fox.
Yeah. And so Fox Network is, you would think of them as being conservative bunch, but they're really not. Out in Hollywood, it's liberal, liberal, liberal.
Well, and
the gatekeepers again, and the decision makers.
The Fox Entertainment Division, they're the folks that brought us Married with Children.
Right.
and The Simpsons. And what in the world was any more controversial than those shows when they started out?
Well, you know, when I met with ABC, the first thing she looked across the table at me and said, let me ask you a question. Have you ever tweeted on Ambien? Because Roseanne, of course, that was a billion-dollar deal, and boom, kicked her right out. So...
Right now, our old buddy Moses Todd standing by. He's been patiently holding on to talk to Chad. How you doing, Moses?
Good. Hey, Chad. I guess I have a couple of questions. One, let me congratulate you on your success, and especially coming out of the Richmond County school system, you know. And that's not a well. Let me just move on. Doing satire. Do the average person understand it, or do you need to be at a certain education level or worldview to get it? And do you do, I know you do a conservative satire, which you would probably be talking about the opposite, the liberals versus the conservative. Do you vice versa and do a mix it up?
I mix it up. I think that nothing's off limits. You know, I think comedy is the last bastion of true free speech that's out there, and people are trying to change it because people are after more applause than they are laughter, and people are so thin-skinned. But I think that as long as Washington, D.C. is writing the jokes, I'm going to tell them. And so I'm going to pick on everybody equally, and I don't apologize for it. And you know, it's everybody has their own version of patriotism, and I like to be fair. But, hey, the first person I make fun of is always myself. You know, and then I can mock everybody else.
Yeah, we'll have a great show tomorrow night, and I'll try to get down.
Thanks, okay. Moses.
Thank you, Moses. Always a pleasure, buddy. I was telling Chad what Moses did to meet all of us in the public eye all those years ago. He took on a drug gang in the Barton Chapel neighborhood, and he didn't shoot back at him. He went after him with a baseball bat.
That's amazing.
And he won. He ran them out, and then he, you know, would run for office every now and then, and it took him a couple of terms to finally win. But when he finally did, he was one of the best representatives we've ever had around here. Kelby, standing by on line two. What's up, Kelby?
Yeah, well, I wish my man was successful. He made it to Hollywood, but I just want to tell you that, you know, I think that you and him today have been terrible, atrocious, unpleasant, distasteful, sickening, disgustful, nauseating, offensive, awful, appalling, hateful, unsavory, and beyond the pale.
What in the world? We've been rather well behaved today.
That's eloquent.
No. I think that last caller talking about Boudier.
By the way, nobody's had more fun making fun of his name than Oprah Winfrey has.
But you're talking about homosexuals, and I think it was very distasteful. My question to you is...
By the way, did you hear me admonish him when we got him off the phone? I didn't agree with what he said. But just like you, Kelby, he's got a right to say it. You know, he didn't break FCC regulations. He expressed an opinion that I don't necessarily agree with, but, you know.
You know, but you all were laughing, and,
I was in here laughing at you when you were going down your list of all the terrible things that we've done.
Welcome to the world of talk radio, bro.
There you go, Kelby.
I know.
And
hey,
by the way, Kelby's actually had a career in talk radio before.
Yeah.
Listen, about four or five times, right, Kelby?
Yeah. I know. But beyond that, if the guy was to be elected, you know, I think y'all got to lay off the guy, whatever his sexual preference is.
I don't.
You know,
did you hear
Kelby,
either me or Chad?
He also said, Austin said he doesn't care what somebody does. And for the record, you know, my agent that's responsible for most of my career is gay. So, you know, there you go. We really don't care.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you don't care.
All right.
That made my day.
All right,
thank
Kelby,
you.
Hang in there. By the way, your agent's a guy?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was a woman for a minute because that would have been kind of hot.
You know, the thing about that is if you don't want people to classify you by what your identity and persuasion is, quit making a thing out of it. Just be a person.
Yeah.
Really, nobody cares who you're sleeping with.
Yeah, but we must all admit, because quite frankly, we're men and we're pigs. Buttigieg's name is quite unfortunate.
It really is. And so is Swalwell. There's a lot of fun that can happen with that. But just so you know, Kelby, as a person in the world of comedy, I'm going to make fun of everybody. I don't care if you're white, black, skinny, fat, male, female, gay, straight. I don't care.
And I'm not going to list of his ex-wives.
I'm not going to go out there. You're right. I'm not going to go out and do an apology tour like Kevin Hart did recently. That is the world of comedy. And by the way, Glenn said some things that I thought were pretty funny. It was pretty brazen and bold, the things that he said. And I was like, well, hey, you know what I'd like like to have a beer with this guy and find out what he really thinks.
Well, what was interesting is after we got Glenn off the phone and during break, we were able to hear some stories from Chad about some personal friends of his who know some of these behind-the-scenes women of infamy, should we say.
Yeah.
And great stories, ladies and gentlemen. You should write a book.
Yeah.
You should write a
tell-all.
Yeah.
I'd be like,
and
you know,
most of them come with their own layouts. Didn't some of those women that you mentioned
exactly
do photo spreads?
100%.
Absolutely.
Nothing's hidden.
But, you know, it is hilarious to me when I hear anyone talk about the debauchery of Donald Trump. Somewhere Ted Kennedy, JFK, and RFK are sitting wherever they're sitting, laughing.
Yeah.
aren't you glad they don't have our pictures?
Well, I tell you what, we can be thankful that we didn't get what we deserve in America with Hillary Clinton and the things that we know now. You used to think the FBI and the DOJ was down the middle and nonpartisan, but we've learned other things. And I'll just tell you, I had dinner with Ben Carson last summer, and he told me, he said, you know, I bowed out of this thing because America didn't need a Boy Scout. They needed a bully on the block who's going to take care of business.
Well, that's what they got.
They didn't need a choir boy.
Man, what fun it was talking to you today. Chad Prather is at the Miller Theater. Get out and see him.
Thanks for listening to the Rhodes Rewind of the Austin Rhodes Show. Listen to Austin weekdays from 3 till 6 on Augusta's News Talk and Information Station, WGAC, at 95.1 FM, 101.9 FM, and AM 580. Stream it live on WGAC.com or on the WGAC mobile app. Thanks for listening to the Rhodes Rewind of the Austin Rhodes Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.